Help us keep WORT, a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Make Music Madison is back on June 21st for the 13th annual day of free outdoor live music across the city. Here's how you can get involved. Online registration for musicians to participate and venues to schedule events is open through June 1st at makemusicmadison.org. All genres and styles of music are welcome, and there are no age limits or skill levels required. The Make Music Madison website is used to match artists who need a stage with venues who seek performers. At noon on June 20th, matchmaking ends and all shows must be confirmed in the system. Again, advance registration for venues and musicians at makemusicmadison.org closes at 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, June 1st. And mark your calendars for Make Music Day on Saturday, June 21st. Bringing you a variety of music every day of the year, this is WORT Madison.
Good evening and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine, the science news program on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. It's Earth Week. Today on the show, we're revisiting a conversation from earlier this week about the climate emergency. Tetra Pac-Man is a Madison artist. He joined a public affair host, Douglas Haynes, earlier this week for a conversation about his artistic wake-up call. His current installation, Wake Up, and exhibit Doing Something, are on display at Central Library this week. Here's a portion of their conversation. To find the full conversation, head to wartfm.org. Once again, to find the full conversation, head to wartfm.org.
A local artistic wake-up call about the climate emergency. Madison artist Tetra Pac-Man is with me in the studio to talk about his recent role as artist in residence at the Madison Public Library and his current installation, Wake Up, and a collaborative exhibit, Doing Something, on display at the Central Library through this week. Tetra Pac-Man was one of the Madison Public Library's first artists in residence in 2013. He's been back over the past 9 months or so. His practice is focused on community-generated social sculpture projects. His work is about the future and the challenges we face today as a community, and he explores the role of art as a mechanism to generate awareness about the climate crisis. And that's in particular what we're going to talk about today with this really thought-provoking new work that he has generated and generated with community members of the Madison Public Library. Tetra Pac-Man, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad to have your voice here in the studio with us during Earth Week. Thanks for coming in. So, Tetra Pac-Man, first, I want to start a little bit with your story and you and your name. What's the origin of it? Because I'm sure behind that name, there's a reflection of your art and your practice and your vision of what you're doing as an artist. So tell us a little bit more about you.
Of course. Thank you. Well, I've been an artist since, 1991 is when I start to work and decide to use my energy and my time and my mind to making art. But when I arrived here in Madison in 2012, and my first interactions with the community was through the Madison Public Library, we get a grant to make a piece for the, in that time, project of renewing the Meadow Ridge Library. So we get a grant to make a piece, and we pick a material, the Tetra Pak boxes, to make that material, to make that piece. So over the process, I became the artist in residence. At that time, I was the second artist in residence for the library, and that was a great experience because allow us to understand community and to show how different approach in public space and materials and working could be possible. So in one interview with the Isthmus, the reported write down the Tetra Pac-Man.
Uh-huh.
So I take it.
Yeah.
It's like, it was a name given to me. It was amazing because I was the only one. So now I adopted, if you Google Tetra Pac-Man with K, you find my work. And in these times in the internet, having the uniqueness is priceless.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to go when I'm working as an artist with my Tetra Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Tetra Pak name.
And Tetra Pak is that material that mini milk cartons, for example, are made out of, right?
Yes. Yeah. They call it shelf-stable foods.
Okay.
There are foods that, because the properties of the materials, that is so smart, science is so smart, and engineers are so smart that they can make these solutions. And this, in this case, is a mix of paper, aluminum, and plastic. And if you put foods inside that box, it's not necessary to refrigerate the food and can preserve for months, even years. So, but the problem is that when you mix those three materials together, you cannot separate them. And that's the challenge. So the box say recyclable where facilities exist.
Yeah.
And you need to Google if your city, your town, where you live, can do it. And actually Madison does.
Oh, it does? And
yes, that's why we did that project at that time, to share with the people that those boxes that are so convenient also can be recyclable. And let's make a parenthesis there, because 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we're still thinking that recycling was a great solution. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's still, we need to keep doing it, but we know that's not the solution. It's one of our challenges still. The quantity of waste that we produce for our way of life, how we live and how the systems around us evolve and distribute themselves. But the problem that they put in us, the final consumers, is too big. So thinking that it's our responsibility just to, recycle, and then check if your city have capacity to handle that things, it's just... It's not make sense.
It's too much individual burden, you're saying, and the burden should be where?
In the company that produced the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like they should take it back and take responsibility, because what I want is what is inside the package, not the package.
Mm-hmm. And how did your art back in those days during that first residency incorporate Tetra Pak?
Well, we made this big piece for the Meadowbridge Library. Mm-hmm. It's still there. It's a permanent piece. Mm-hmm. We have 10 years over there. It's 99 point something, just Tetra Paks.
Okay.
We figured out how to put them together, thinking backwards, how it's made. And then we during the process of that residency, we invite the community to sketch possible designs. Then with friends and members of the library and the public, we select a design. And I just... was my challenge to build over that idea. So my process is very freeing ways that I can adapt and take from my surroundings, and that means people, materials, situations, to propose something. It's like, funny is that I made in my life just two or three projects with Tetra Paks. It's like, but I have plenty, any materials that you think is trash or waste, I have a solution in creative ways. But it's just because I can't. Then I figured it out at one point that was better for me and my practice and my conscience to try to find alternatives of secondhand stuff than trying to keep buying new stuff for being doing my egocentric practice. Mm-hmm. Artists are very egocentric. We have a weird need of me, you know? And I try to take away that part. That's also very interesting of the nickname. It's like, it's not me, it's the idea of my practice.
Mm-hmm. Let's continue talking about that practice a little bit more then, and how it's evolved. You've been doing this residency since last fall at the Bubbler at the Central Library, right? What drew you back to the Madison Public Library as a way to continue that practice you were just describing?
Well, when this open call for the last residency that I applied was there, and they say they will welcome in previous residents, because they were celebrating the 10 years, I said, oh, I think this is a moment to come back. I had been not making a lot of art in the last years because parenthood. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's super amazing because I grow a relationship with my son that is unique. And now that he's 8 and a half, when this opportunity came, the first person that I asked was he. I say, are you willing to be with me during our time together doing this? And I explain a little more and he say, oh yeah. So we worked together this residency. We both were the artists in residency. And that was amazing because it was a challenge, but was also a great opportunity that gave this result. So the people that went to see us there was very surprised to see a little kid around taking pictures, deciding if the music was good or not, and just putting his part there. And for me was a challenge, but also an opportunity to prove that I'm ready to be back. And that's what I'm here.
Mm-hmm. And a new way to collaborate, I imagine, with your son.
Oh, it's amazing. Yes, we have so much fun. And it's here. We just starting a new stage in our lives.
So let's dig into the process of what you were actually doing during this residency, the workshops and the public aspect of it, as well as the end result. Tell us a little bit more about those activities and workshops that are part of this residency at the Bubbler.
Yeah, when they interview me as a finalist, they say, well, what are you planning to do? What do you want? And I say, I don't know, we're going to be doing something. And was a way that I have a lot of ideas, a lot of these projects that I was working, the climate sheets, my new sculptures based in cardboard like piñatas, the temples. And I said, I want to put a little of everything. It's like there were years of having experiments in my head that I want to pop up. Yep. So, but the center was, I always tell them, I want to keep painting the climate sheets because that's one of my central projects right now that is in my head and I cannot move away of this practice of confronting science and my art practice. And they say, okay. So when we start to do the open studios, people came and figure out like, okay, what is this painting, these numbers? So we start to explain where the information came, this data from the Killing Curve, and explain that making those sheets together was a kind of a performance moment, experience together that could open to new dimensions of conversation. Mm-hmm. And it happened. It's like people was curious. People were like not aware of some things. And I always tell them, I'm not a scientist. I like to observe the science and try to put together these things to understand and facilitate a process of reflection that what is our goal and what is our position and what is our point. As we say at the beginning, it's not our fault as individuals, like you need to recycle. Mm-hmm. No, yes. Keep recycling, please. But we need to point to the cause of all this mess.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is what your climate sheets are really doing ultimately, right? Is pointing to the cause. And so let's pause a minute and really try to describe for folks what those climate sheets are. So I was looking at the Madison Public Library website and the Bubbler website, and they have some images there. We could pick any number of numbers, but I'll just give an example. So there's one green banner that there's a picture of on the website of a participant in the project painting, and it says at the top, across the top, 427.01, and then below it, it says February 25th. Explain to us what the number there and the date signify or refer to.
Yes, thank you. The climate sheets have the same format and, as you mentioned, have a value in the top that has not anything else. So the measure for that number is parts per million and will represent the amount of carbon emissions, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere mix. We need to remember and make aware people, and that's the goal of the project, that in the 80s, scientists told us to do not cross 350 parts per million. So we are in the 430s. That's way farther that the limit that was dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that's the main goal of this project. Say, in this month of this year, this was the reading. The killing curve started to measure this in the 1958. Mm-hmm. And in the 80s, in 86, we crossed for first time the 350. And in 88, scientists came to Congress to say, this is dangerous. And since then...
You said 1988.
Yes.
Yeah.
I started working as an artist in 1991. The first time that I hear climate change stop related was 1989. So since then, my head is like, what is this? But then also since then, all the time doing my personal projects, I've been observing how we are in denial and how the fossil fuel industry is working super hard to distract us and to say, nah, it's okay. You know? Mm-hmm. So we are super manipulated in levels that is hard to understand. But each time that we hear the terms climate change or global warming, it don't make sense. But if we talk about this number and say, just compare it with the speed limits and try to make an average how fast you are going and then consider that there's nobody watching you doing that. So the chances for an accident are high. That's where we are.
You're comparing that an individual speeding with the sort of society speeding up the production of CO2 and putting it in an atmosphere to say, you know,
so, yeah,
the chances of an accident here, hey, it's like an alarm bell are very high.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We will not put our kids in a school bus knowing that it's going to speed this way.
Mm.
And we are doing that in this war and we are allowing it to happen. Let's mention that carbon dioxide is not the only greenhouse. It's the top, but it's followed by others. And the next one is very dangerous. It's methane. And it's very dangerous because we call it natural gas.
Uh-huh.
And natural gas is not green.
And Tetra Pak Man promised me before the show that he had some surprises for me. And as he was talking about the dangers of methane, he pulled out from a sheath of what appears to be duct tape or aluminum foil, I'm not sure which, a sign that says natural gas is not green that he's holding up in front of me. And natural gas is not clean. And we're getting a little performance art here in the studio as well. And natural gas is also not natural. So I have three black and white signs in front of me reminding me that natural gas is not something that... though it's in the earth, not something that is meant to be put up into the atmosphere. And that's where you're coming from with the methane, right? Obviously,
yes.
Methane is a big byproduct of the burning of natural gas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's natural gas is basically methane. So it's fracking gas, is fossil gas, and it's very dangerous because they say it's a clean bridge energy. That's a misleading lie, because when you burn natural gas, yes, it's cleaner than coal. Okay? But if you release the gas, it have 80 times more power of heat trapping than CO2 in the short term. And the short term is 20 years. Mm-hmm. So we are toast because we have a lot of natural gas production and natural sources like a permafrost release. So this is so interesting because we keep being greenwashed that natural gas is your friend.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry. This city have a problem with greenwashing.
Madison, you're saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. With the energy company here, like to sponsor everybody, including people that I know, for just say, we are doing great. I know. They have the ability, all fossil fuel companies have the ability to switch 100%, but they don't want to lose money. So we need to lose our future. That doesn't make sense to me. And it's a big contradiction. We see it in so many ways, how we are agreeing in one way that we are in danger, but in the other hand, we are allowing the people making this bad keep going. So... that, why? It's like,
So these signs are really kind of putting that contradiction right in our face. I want to remind listeners that you are listening to A Public Affair here on WRT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking today with Madison artist Tetra Pac-Man about his current exhibits at the Central Library in downtown Madison, his recent residency at the Madison Public Library. If you have a question for Tetra Pac-Man or want to share a comment about his work at the Madison Public Library, please give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9. I'm sure many people have walked by on Mifflin Street and seen the banners hanging in the big windows of Central Library and wondered, what's that all about? This is your chance to listen in and ask more about what those banners are meant to be confronting us with, and get involved in conversation here with the artist behind them, Tetra Pac-Man. So let's return to right where we left off there. And we were talking before the show about confrontation and the role of art in making people uncomfortable. Tell us about your goals a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. And I like that you use the term confrontation and uncomfortable, because mm-hmm. they are the two things that I try to play around mm-hmm. in a way that is not aggressive. Yeah. I like to use curiosity, like spark the curiosity in the people and prepare them, open themselves to listen. So if you are right in front of a person and show a banner and say, climate change is happening now, do something, yeah. people will say, move away.
Yeah,
I need to keep going.
Much.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you put numbers and cryptic data in a betting sheet on the windows of a public library, people come inside just to ask, what are those numbers about? And that was wonderful. And I want to say thank you to all the people in the library, and especially the people that facilitate this process, Carly, Trent, Tana, all the staff, the foundation, the friends of the library. I'm super happy that they allowed me to do all this, and to the people, the patrons in the library, to be open to come and talk to staff and say, what are those numbers? And then be ready to start a conversation and say, oh, wow. A lot of people didn't know that. And it's what I'm saying before.
So you're starting conversations.
Exactly. Yep. My goal, as I say, I'm not a scientist, but I can help others to start a conversation and to start to do their own process of learning and opening to the facts. It's like science is based on facts. This is not about if you believe or not. There's proof of the causes, and there's data and analysis and study that are telling us the consequence if we keep ignoring it. And I don't want to get too deep into this, but we know that the new administration is doing everything to walk backwards. So this is terrifying. But it's upon us to make the big decisions mm-hmm. to stop supporting those companies that are making this going bad. So I wish, one of my biggest dreams as an artist is become very famous and very powerful in markets, you know, and then can say to organizations, small organizations that depends on funding from fossil fuel corporations, say, keep that away, kick yeah. that. I give you the money that they are giving you, but be clean. It's like, we just need to start to switch, but there's not enough people with resources bold enough to say, I'm going to step in with the needs of my community, because what are doing fossil fuel companies is abusing the needs of the community, saying, I will give you $10,000, $5,000 for your summer concert, for whatever mm-hmm. you are organizing, but put my logo there so people think I'm doing good things.
Or just to say, we're providing a vital public resource, right? I've never heard it framed quite that way before, but you're right. It's an abuse of the community's trust.
Of course.
In a sense.
Because they tie my hands. Then if I talk with people and I say, can you please, if you want to work with me, can you please get rid of that sponsor? And they say, and this is true, say, if we do that, we need to close our doors. So I don't work with those organizations because it's hard for me, you know? So, but everybody's in that situation. So I feel it's very bully. So we need alternative where to find, because the community organization, of course, need support because we know where we live and how situations are. But where are that? So I wish, and this is my biggest dreams, and I know I'm in the path of, because I've been in this path for more than 30 years. It's like, I can do that. My art can do that. Together, we can do that. it's just thinking in different ways how community works and how arts can make magic.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about the magic of the art itself and the magic of this collaborative process you've been engaged in. We were also talking before the show about how it's important with a serious subject like climate that people can tune out from, like you said, because it can be too overwhelming, to not make the way we present it always so serious. Tell me more about that.
I don't know how that happens. I'm just silly. And I involve that in my practice mm-hmm. to be playful. So it's very important to always making jokes around these serious issues. And as you mentioned minutes ago, I did a little performance here. I'm all the time performing. It's like, so being in public, working in my thing, it's just a show, literally. So, for example, I wear masks or accessories in my head that make people come and just check what's going on.
Yeah.
And that make the icebreaker to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. The most wonderful moments for me were being at the Bubbler and just knowing that people was coming in because they were super curious what was going on. And then being able to laugh a little over the process of explaining the danger that we are. And that's just wonderful. And I don't know how to describe it, but it just happened. Mm-hmm. It's like...
Our disease is the same one as the trees, unaware. cheating on, cheating on me. I've been cheating on, cheating on you. You've been cheating on me. But I've been cheating through this life.
Hi, this is Casey Fox, host of Guilty Pleasures, every Wednesday night, 8 to 11 p.m. here on WORT. The Milwaukee Film Festival started April 24th and runs for 2 weeks. On my show, April 30th, I'll be featuring oodles of interviews with producers and directors of films coming up at the Oriental and Downer Theaters in the Lower East Side of Milwaukee. It'd be great to have you tuned in to find a movie right in your wheelhouse that you can maybe take your friends and or relatives to make a day of it in Milwaukee. So please tune in Wednesday, April 30th, 8 to 11 p.m. as I highlight week 2 of the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Well, here we are again. It's Radio Literature time. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We have some well-known guests and special guests. Of course, all our guests are special, but they're especially special and well-known. And they are David Simmons and Alex Hancock. Hello, David and Alex.
Hello, Melvin.
Hello, Melvin.